You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about the weekly anime, dynamiting the brain and sinking in the sail of madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Yo.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of... Let me rewind the calendar so I can see what week it was. It was the 23rd of September 2019 to the 29th of September 2019. And we start off with... Oh, it's the thing Brian forgot to watch. Dwayne's the only one who remembered to watch everything this week. It's the Demon Girl Next Door, episode 12. Feelings to Convey, a New Leap Forward for Demonkind.
Oh, shit.
It's the end.
Now I gotta figure out what the hell happened.
Is this the grand finale?
It is the setup for the new
season.
The new status quo, the new season, that kind of thing. We got, I'm trying to remember any character's name. We got, I can't remember her regular name. Shamiko is chasing down Momo and saying, it's like, hey, you know, it's cool that your sibling, like trapped my father in a box. The mother's like pretty keen. It's like, whew, that's a load off my chest, where it's just like, we don't have to keep these secrets anymore. From now on, we can call this box Daddy-san or whatever the hell. They have some stupid fucking name for it. And I was just like, okay. Her little sister takes it super well, and he's like, that makes a lot of sense. I don't think their space pirate is a viable career, that kind of thing. Shamiko chases Momo down, and she has a bit of a talk with her where she comes across Lilith, who initially she thinks is being chewed up by that same dog again, but Lilith is just in a bush nearby. She brings the two of them meet up with. Initially they have to try and find where Momo is, and they talk to the other magical girl, and she says she hangs out by that old Sakura tree on the hill. It has great personal significance to her, and I'm guessing some dramatic thing that we'll see next season regarding her sister. But meets her up there, and Shamiko has a deal for her. It's like, hey, tell you what, how about you become my evil vassal? Because her mother was basically explaining that she was the vassal to her father. And that's why she was in on this whole magical business, because her dad, she showed a little photo. Her dad was very short, and she's worrying because she's short. She's got her dad's genes, and since she has horns as well, like her dad. Her mother is, she's kind of thinking, it's like, oh, wait, I could make Momo my vassal. Again, just hinting on the whole romantic fucking thing of it. But if you join me, then you won't be tied to the magical girl thing, and you'll be able to hunt down the demons and... Not hunt down the demons, be able to see the demons and find out what happened to your sister. Because at the moment, this barrier is protecting you from seeing any demons. And it's a weird, fluky coincidence that we met. And Lilith is kind of like, yeah, you should still become the vassal. Like, there's a lot of logical reasons for it. And you'll just basically change your alignment. It's easy enough. Don't worry about it. And Momo is nearly fucking sold on it. And then she's like, wait a minute. You're super weak. So if you become my power source, won't I get super weak? And they're like, So yeah, she denies it, taking it. They nearly had her. But she's just going to say, hey, Shamiko, you can just find the other demons for me. And, you know, cause I can't see them, but you can see them for me. So we're good. And I'll just train you twice as hard. Deal? And Shamiko's kind of like, that's basically the same thing we had before. It's like, yeah, new status quo, exactly the same. Except now we know what the fuck we're doing. And that's it. Some fun jokes, some fun, like playing off each other, that kind of thing. Characters reacting far too glibly to very extreme things, but that's the show.
I'm just skimming through. I noticed that the teacher now calls Shamiko Shadow Mistress.
That is her full name. I think she's being respectful. I do appreciate that.
And helping her write this letter of challenge that she's sending.
Yeah, like she writes out a letter. It's like, meet me by the park and I'll give you yours kind of thing. And the teacher's okay, one, you can't write letters about duels because that's illegal. Two, how about you use some cute stickers? How about you open up with a seasonal greeting and, you know, all this kind of like letter writing advice. And then it's just a really nice letter.
And it looks like a love letter.
It does look like a love letter. And they both pick it up the wrong way, where Momo meets her after school wearing something light and breezy, just like it said in the letter. And she's like, oh, we're going to go out on a date and do something fun. That sounds cool. And Jamie goes there in her gym gear. He's like, what the fuck, dude? We're going to fight. What's going on? So... they still have a weird relationship where they, again, the entire episode, she keeps going, like, Momo's my friend. I mean, rival. You know, it's...
Frenemy is the term.
Exactly. Yeah, basically. But yeah, no, still very enjoyable show. Look forward to it when it comes back.
Then we got Dr. Stone, episode 13, The Masked Warrior, in which a lot of things happen because they've got a whole load of stuff now and they can get on with the science.
I did like the quickness of the pace here, because it's like, hey, but remember that map he wrote, the road map he drew out? It's like, we got a lot of steps to go. And he's like, no, what are you talking about? We got everything we need. Now to experiment.
Yes.
Did anybody else's player really crap out whenever they were trying to zoom in and out of that map? Because I was thinking, I boot episode up and watch this on the computer on my break at work. And like, okay, that's fine. And it's just like, it's playing this fine. It opens a little map screen where it kind of zooms in or kind of like tilts forward, and then it starts like stalling the hell out. I thought, okay, well, why is it? We're like glitching the connection. So I just kind of go back again to see it roll properly. But it keeps on doing it. Rest of the episode plays just fine.
There's something done to the player for sure.
And then later, yeah, because it happens.
On Crunchyroll, the buttons are different. I noticed just the interface is different. But it was happening to me on... crap, I think it was Dr. Stone. That's why I had to end up watching on the PlayStation.
I feel like it hit a limit of the number of subtitles.
Subs. Yeah, because it has all the different languages on Dr. Stone, at least. I know that was the thing that I figured might be messing it.
Yeah, because when it refers to that little map later on, middle of the episode again, it starts like stuttering as well. So
yeah, it's like it's loaded in all the other subtitles below it, and it's futs in with the video.
Yes,
because it's really strange.
They try to scroll the subtitles along with the image, I think, is the problem.
That's the new thing. It was very stuttery, the subtitle thing. The same in they used it in another thing as well, but yeah, it's not quite working so well because it's basically moving one character space up or down, whichever way.
I can't remember that being
scrolling.
A problem on the PS4 player though.
Yeah, well,
it futzes with the video a little, but not nearly as bad as it does in a browser. Yeah,
if I was watching the browser at work, and it's like, it's probably just I put it down initially to just like, probably the connection here isn't great, but it's been fine rest of the time. But yeah, I was always just at these two points where it was showing the diagram that it futzed out.
I think it was Kitaro I was having trouble with as well. I had to watch out on a player rather than the computer. Weird going on.
Yeah, let's just be thankful that their software can actually subtitle those things at all.
Yes, that's fair. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, yes, they've got all this stuff. They bash through it all, and there's one more thing they need, and that's some alcohol. And then luckily old man Koseki is here to say, well, if you need some alcohol, all you got to do is win the grand bout tomorrow and you'll have all the alcohol you need.
It's all coming together.
You've been practicing for all these weeks or possibly months.
6 months it's established.
I haven't stepped inside the village for nearly half a year or something. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Which makes a lot more sense, like, because other than that, they're really sciencing very fast. As it is, they're still sciencing very, very fast.
Well, I like how they're just acknowledging, these things do take time. We're doing them, like, you know, you're seeing us the short version, because for purposes of TV and entertainment and all that. But these things in the real world do take, like, a lot of time to distill and ferment and all sorts.
Because obviously in this episode the last episode, they went to the acid pool and all the way back. That might have taken them days in reality.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it definitely looks like they've done multiple trips based on the quick cuts you get here.
That's true.
Just wait until they invent the wheel and later on the internal combustion engine, which is not far away.
No, it's not far away.
I figured they'd go backwards somehow. They'd invent a fucking aeroplane before they'd invent a car.
Yeah, right.
okay, am I just spoiling for myself?
Not quite, no,
the
but there's things they've invented before aeroplanes.
Like the third thing they made, besides not including the boxcar, was fucking ramen, dude. I mean, I don't know what to expect with this show. It's kind of great.
Anyway, the next step is Ginro has entered Senku in the tournament as well because he's over 14. And there's no rules that you have to be a villager to enter. And Senku's just gleeful because, hey, they run through their plans, which is A, fighting dirty, they're going to hit Magma in his testicles.
Yeah, even Chrome has practiced all his time. It's like, he's getting really good at hitting that one spot. Yes, I'm going to hit him in the balls.
B.
and even your one's like, that's a good idea, actually. That would pretty much fuck him up. You know.
Fixing matches. So Whoever, if any of them meet up with one of the ones who are stronger on the, in the Science Kingdom, then they're just going to lie down for them. And so they'll have got, had gone through a fight without actually expending any energy.
Whereas your man will have to fight all the way through to the finals, whereas they can just like go like, oh no, I totally ended up. It's weird how much Senku and Ginro are like buddy-buddy in this one.
Underhandedness, certainly. Yes.
Yeah, I guess they're brought into that.
And C, performance-enhancing drugs.
Well, sugar high.
Well, yeah, of course it helps. Isotonic sport drink. We haven't got Lucozade energy in this day and age, but we have most of the things that can give to us the effects of it. And as well, like, despite the fact that if it got so many of people on their side, it's like filling up all the slots in the tournament. It's like, there's like pretty, like, kind of just like stuff in the ballot box in their favor.
Really rigging the numbers, yeah.
Yeah.
And their character designs, I'm going to have to go back to my anime space disco notes to look up who the manga artist it is that they're referencing when their tongues go all zigzaggy and snake-like.
Where they turn it like
they literally turn into snakes, Kinro, because Kinro has none of this. He wants to win this fight honorably.
Rules are rules. It's like, it's not against the rules to just
can't wear
roll
glasses.
The fight.
I want to be a nerd. It's the rules, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're nothing that they're doing is technically illegal, but it is against the spirit of the thing. But science don't give a damn.
Also, because it turns out Magma's going to be playing dirty himself. But yes, they go to the village, and Senku announces his name, and Ruri's like, Senku? And they're like, how do you know his name? And she wants to know what his surname is as well.
Which is weird, because none of them have surnames.
Yes. Mm. So he's surprised, like, why do you know what a surname is? Why are you curious about it? But we can ask all that after we've won the tournament.
Yes, after she gets over her coughing first. Yes. It conveniently cuts off any further conversation.
To which Magma's like, haha, maybe I won't even have to kill her after all. She's going to die before.
The weird thing of him announcing that out loud in public with a bunch of people around and no one going like, Magma, you need to fucking leave now.
Ah, yeah, but he's the strongest guy in the village. Who's going to stop him?
Yeah.
Like two or three guys? Because I feel like that would win, right?
I'd forgotten just how absolutely awful Magma is to begin with.
Yeah, he seems kind of a prick. Put him mildly.
Well, I think he still remains a prick to just, like, find ways to divert his prickish energy towards more beneficial ends.
Okay.
Yeah, oh man. Not this week's chapter, but last week's chapter of Dr. Stone when Ken's listening to everybody. And then they're going, now all we need now is somebody to sweet talk this guy. And then he's like, oh, that's me.
Yes. I gotta step up. I'm so glad he's still around. He was, and this chapter this week is like, oh yes, masterclass is putting out all the tricks, all the maneuvers to try and get his way out of the situation, talk his way out. It's great. But that's far in the future.
That's far in the future.
Fighting is now.
Plenty more talking to come from him. So then, what's his name? The little shit who associates with Magma.
Magma Core Mantle. Mantle. Is his
Mantle. Yes.
Yeah. He claims that, Suika's fallen in the river. And they're like, he's lying.
Well, he says Suika fell in the river gathering the herbs that Ginro ate all of.
Yes.
And there's like, how did you know she was gathering herbs, motherfucker, if you just happened to be passing by, you idiot.
Also,
you're bad at lying. We got big brains.
And they just start kicking him on the bridge.
Well, fuck him. He's a little shit.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
And even his kind of shit-eating grin where he was like, well, on the off chance he's not lying, I can't stay here. And he's like,
And it's the fact that he's being beaten up by the two weakest of the
Science
Kingdom.
You know how weak he is. Yeah. These guys are skinny nerds. Mm.
Yes, but Kohaku is like, in theory she has to rescue Suika, but Suika manages to rescue herself.
It's like, oh right, I have supernatural powers. I keep forgetting.
Well, just like a pliable child's body you can escape her bonds with.
She does teleport later on.
Oh, she's just rolled her way there inside her own head.
No, when she appears at the top of the stairs and they're like, how did you get here?
That reminded me of Black Clover, like in the scenes where Charmy will suddenly appear sitting on the lap of the Wizard King.
She's small but crafty.
Yes. Except when she's not. Yeah. in a weird bit of character design, which eventually will make sense.
Not a great joke for a comic that's set to be animated.
The first round is Magma versus Kinro, which is the match that they were hoping would come later. They wanted to wear him out first. Because ideally they want one of the lads to win so they don't have to go through all this again when Kahaku inevitably wins.
Yeah, because even she's agreed to like throw the match to let Kinro in because this constant... Basically, it just does a do-over every time she wins.
It's like every 4 months or something they have to keep on doing this.
Yeah, and that's grand, but they need to put a stop to this because obviously, you know, your man's trying more underhanded means now, so...
Suika works out that the reason why Kinro eventually, after an initial lead, doesn't seem to be able to block Magma's blows is because he's got the fuzzy eye disease as well.
And it's a thing of Kinro's gotten a lot better, so Magma's kind of backing off and taking him seriously, and the fact that he's backing off a little is putting enough distance that his nearsightedness is causing an effect.
Yeah.
Messing him up,
And so that's when she teleports and then rolls herself down from the chieftain's hut to launch her helmet towards Kinro. And then he leaps into the sky, catches it on his head, and then does an amazingly badass pose.
Get high.
Ching. Oh, dear.
Except there's a possibility that they're going to get disqualified based on what was established earlier when Mantle was about to throw some rocks at him.
That was, a negative thing, though.
Yeah, but I can't remember how it goes, but I'm like...
It's like no exterior interference of any kind or whatever.
Okay.
A foreign object thrown into the ring.
If someone throws a rock at you and you catch it on your head and you still win, I mean, I feel like you double win. You should press twice or something. I don't know. I'll just catch this helmet on my head. Oh, I'm a better fighter now. Even gets the cool guy line. What is it? If I didn't have the fuzzy eye disease, I would have been stronger than you years ago. Something like that.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yep. More of that to come to, yes. You might be moaned. The Shonen Jump comic tournament arguably will be over and probably the end next episode, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that they've been building to this the whole time. It's like, oh, the tournament's coming up, that kind of fucking Dragon Ball-ness. But the fact that they're just like, what match we wanted for the final is the first match. Whoops.
if he loses and if Kohaku's not back for the time for her match, which is the third one, then basically you just know that the other guys are all going to have to cheat to get through the tournament.
That's pretty much how they roll, yeah.
Ooh, peril.
Yeah.
Dooku Man, that's the guy whose art style is aping whenever their tongues get super zigzaggy and shooting out their mouths. And they
There's a bunch of good old wrinkly faces as well. I think anytime they're making the drugs and it's like, so you're gonna make my sister drink that. those were pretty great.
Oh, there's that one shock response when Kinro puts the helmet on. And it clearly does not look as badass in the flesh to the people who were there.
Yeah.
I thought it was more so when they get the bad draw. It's like, okay, based on the lots, we probably, hopefully get a match later on, middle of the table. No, he's drawn for his thing. Shit. In unison. I did watch that strong documentary they put up in Crunchyroll, actually. That I remember to watch above the other thing, but whatever.
That I forgot to watch still.
it's there if you want to look at it. It's probably not a ton there for anybody who's looked into and production in any way and how it's made. But it's a good display of some of the processes if you're interested, and I don't really know much about it. So the producer and director is kind of talking about what we're going through. I liked this inside of a TMS studio. They got these like giant like tablets, you know, like a writing or drawing desk, you know, it's kind of a bit kind of board at an angle. That whole board was just like a touchscreen tablet you can draw on.
Those are fucking gorgeous. Yeah.
It's pretty rad. if you look closely, if you're not a manga reader, you'll be able to see scenes like far ahead if you have to be animated or been alluded to in the actual TV show. So keep an eagle eye out. Yeah, I'm just like kind of comparing how their process of building things bit by bit or fitting like a sort of a kindred spirit with Dr. Stone itself, and it's like science and how it's about like baby steps trying to figure out what works, what doesn't, and then like building up to something later on, and how each step would add on to the next and put them all together, you get something big and impressive that you can be proud of that you've achieved. And actually, I did like a lot of research efforts, reference work to actually, if you want to call it that, went out and tried glass blowing to get the feel of that right, and also get the feel of the mistakes that they're getting made right, because the producer gave it a go by trying to make like the long-necked Urban Meyer flask, but it's like, get long-necked, because it's a fucking pain in the arse to do. I couldn't do it, but in fairness to him, he had two examples of ones that he made, or maybe somebody on the staff made like in the studio with him, so good on him.
That's good research, yeah.
Yeah, and also tried as well, like, the getting samples of all the stuff, the various minerals and things in the show, like, you know, the seashells and rocks, and they got some of the seashells and tried smashing them up to see how they would look. So I was trying to get, like, the feel and see if it could actually kind of render some of these things accurately and properly in the experiments in the anime. So doing due diligence. Even thought about how all the characters are in, like, the... Due 3,000 years away from now, and they're like kind of going back to a prehistoric Stone Age world. They're all wearing kind of animal pelts, so it's hard to distinguish them from a distance then, because they're all like wearing this kind of brown skin animal pelt. So we put a little color accent to try and make them stand out. It's like, what's the name? Yeah, Yuzuriha, Taiju's, automatic interest from the first little bit there. They gave her like a little kind of red scarf or neckerchief to make her stand out, and then obviously Senku's got his little like colors in his hair, and then other little details like that, just so you can be able to tell proper distance in a crowd scene.
The what's that thing where everyone has not necessarily a different silhouette, but like a different color or a different shape or silhouette or code, basically, that you can pick them out easily enough, even though everyone's... Well, most of the villagers are wearing some variation of blue. Yeah.
Yeah. So even though this is a cartoon, even though it's a year like by 5,000, we can't even imagine what it would look like. They've done their utmost to try and like make it as realistically as how it would look as possible, you know, based on what materials would be on hand, what the world would look like when like the nature as we claim the cities and so forth. But like a work into it, and it shows. So good on them.
Okay, next up we've got Vinland Saga, or apparently, as some people must have been searching for it based on what it just came up when I tried to search for it. Vinlad Saga.
It's got a lot of lads in it.
So yes, this is episode 12, and it is called The Land on the Far Bank. What is that land? It's Wales.
It's Kimbru.
Where they meet a bunch of men, he does have a name, and I can't remember what his name is.
I remember he's like rank of sergeant or something.
He's like a general of
Leviticus or something. Yeah.
He's got a Roman name, because that was the thing which caused me to look it up. I was like, okay.
Yep.
So it was like, okay. So apparently the Welsh kingdoms this time, a lot of the kings, if not all the kings, would claim descendants of Magnus Maximus, even though there is no historical evidence that any of them were descendants of Magnus Maximus.
Yeah.
As a way to, like, declare their right to be kings of this area post-Britannia.
It's the last vestiges of the Roman Empire, the narrative says. It's like Wales's lands aren't as fertile. They're a lot more rocky and mountainous. But basically they're kind of held on tightly by all these, it's not a single country, it's a bunch of warring small states, basically.
Yes.
Maybe not warring.
They're uneasy kind of alliances or rivalries breaking out. Well, they may not like each other all that much too much, but they all know that together they all hate England. That's all they have in common, really.
Yeah.
More specifically, they would rather not be, they want, their reason for helping Askeladd is to get, Canute to sign a declaration that when he becomes king, there'll be a non-aggression pact with the Welsh kingdoms.
Yeah, it's like, you leave us alone and we'll leave you alone and we're all fucking good. Which is like, as a reward, that's pretty mild, I gotta say. But maybe not for conquerors.
What's that thing called? You know, you got Hadrian's Wall and then there's like something dyke that separates Wales from...
Oh, yeah, I don't know the bloody name.
Yeah, man. I should know because I just looked at it today.
Offa's dyke.
That's
Offa's
it, dyke. Yes. Because, the bit of Roman history I remember is the bit before Wales is part of the area. But then I would look to Wikipedia and was like, oh yeah, it was all there. That all ties in. And then, but like, it's like 700 years past at this point since Britannia ended. So that gives you like how many generations ahead these people who still think they're descended from Romans.
Still dressing like Romans, still in the Roman longships, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that your man's Thorkel's guys are saying. It's like, they're in these weird ships with like eyeballs on them. I don't know, man.
I just got no dragon heads on the frontispiece or the...
So you know they're not Norse. Yeah.
What's their deal?
Anyway, yeah, they're coming over here, like I say, partly for the benefit of the Welsh, but also maybe to thwart Thorkel. Because Ears has heard that they're getting close. They're gaining ground on them. I was like, oh, there's this guy in both this show and in Golden Camwee, the guy who's really good at hearing.
It's a good superpower in the past, I guess.
Hasn't got a gun though.
No, that is their main disadvantage. We get Ragnar being an awful ass towards this Welsh general is like demanding all three of their boats. Whereas Askeladd says, no, we're not taking a ship. We're going to march all the way through Wales.
Dude, making us all look like assholes. Stop talking.
They're going all the way to Leicester or something, is it?
Gainsborough they're going to.
Gainsborough. Sorry.
It's like, you've already done us like a massive favor just like getting us across the river, dude. So don't.
The fact that they're going to give us an escort on the land is crazy. And they only have three fucking boats, so. Yeah. We'd be lucky to get one, and we're not going to get one.
It shows as well, the guy go up between them, like three boats to the Danes or the Norsemen. It's like, oh, fun, whatever. We've got positive boats. These are our only three boats for, all of our dudes in here in Wales or in this part of Wales. We can't just be giving them away to you fucking freeloaders, you blow-ins, coming in now.
But at the same time,
I think your man's really pissed as well, because he initially sees too many Thors. Thorfinn, and he's like, oh, yes, you look like a strong young prince. He's like, ah, that's not the prince. This guy's the prince. And he's like, you got a weak chin. All right, come on, let's go.
But yeah, but he's also patient with Ragnar, and because obviously he knows that, he's also got to be patient because he doesn't necessarily want to get a retaliation from the Danes.
Yeah. Okay, stupid tourists.
Yeah. But this way, please. The prince is kind of like, whispering into your man's ear, the prince demands you give him three boats. It's like, no, we're not going to do that. I need you to sign the documents. Yeah. The prince says three boats. It's like, all right, I'll get the documents. You can sign them later. It's grand. Don't worry about it.
It's confirmed here that Thorfinn is the same age as Canute.
Yeah.
Because they sign him as bodyguard, which comes important towards the end when a different set of Welsh men roll up and ambush them.
I did like the thing. It was like, oh, Thorfinn can stay, can be his bodyguard. They're around the same age. They'll be best of friends. I'm sure they have lots to talk about.
Lots in common.
Lots of, I don't know, modern pop hits or something. I don't fucking know. Whatever kids talk about.
Well, to be honest, as the series will go on, he's kind of right.
Okay.
Yeah.
They both end up having the same aims, just different, methodology to get to it. Speaking of those aims, we get a little hint of that on the march as the Vikings are discussing what they're going to get when they hand over Canute to
what is best in
Sven.
Life.
Mm. And he's like, oh, I'm going to get gold. Gold's the best. Can't go wrong with gold. He's like, oh, no, I hear Sven's got many beautiful slaves. I'll ask for one of them. Because they just think that Sven's going to give them anything they ask for.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're bringing back the fucking the crown prince. Like, we can ask for whatever the hell we want. A king's ransom, basically, is what they got.
But yeah. Then they ask the priest's opinion of what he wants, and he explains what he wants is love. And the Vikings are like, "What this? What is this love you speak of?
Love is that a new kind of food that they have in England? Because I've never tried it. Is it any
can
good?
I kill
it's
that?
Like, and he's the esoteric thing is like without love, like wine doesn't taste good and women don't matter and that kind of thing. It's like
money
nothing
has no value.
Exactly. Like you, love is the thing you have for these things, but it's something beyond those as well.
Yeah. And then you get some of them taking the piss and he stops, but then the ones who are like walking close to him, go, no, go on. We'd like to hear more.
Tell me of this love.
Seeing you humans called love.
Yeah, there's like one little anachronistic bit where one of the Vikings does the Japanese hand symbol for money when he's talking about gold.
I was thinking of that. It's just like, yeah. I assume the Vikings also had like a symbol, you know, money, do-re-mi. Like, maybe they didn't rub the fingers, maybe they just slapped their hands together and that meant gold. I don't know.
It was the middle finger and you can't show that on TV.
So it ends with a ambush of arrows, and blimey, Ascalad's horse takes it. Takes the worst of it.
All on the face.
Yeah.
Those are good archers, like, kill his horse. I want his horse dead.
All terrible archers, and that wasn't what they were aiming
for. Man, if they weren't all aiming for the head and they all hit the fucking head, they almost feel like real dipshits.
Or they fuck up their story afterwards. It's like, I told aim for the head. Oh, we find a big sub.
We all find an army for the head. That's how we kill that horse that good.
Oh, there's also like a weird bit in the, well, not a weird bit. I can't remember if this is weird or whether it has meaning later on when, they're in discussion and Canute gets distracted by a hawk and tells Ragnar to capture it for him.
I think that's kind of showing that he's kind of out of it.
See, that's the thing. I can't remember whether he is truly out of it at this point or whether it's an act. I can't remember at which point he becomes a super cunning bastard.
Just the way I remember reading it, it seems like it's not something that he ever sort of was putting on. I feel like, you know, it was like,
no,
it was almost,
I feel
like
there's a moment when it clicks, yeah. That he suddenly sees the world how it is.
Yeah, more so, rather than this, he's been playing this all along. I think, no, that doesn't really add up at all. And it was real, like, lines up then with, you know, seeing the world how really, seeing what this all this war and fighting and conquest is really all about, and what its ultimate end and what its ultimate goal is, and what you want to what get out of it. Kind of lines up with Thorfinn. He's like saying, what is this fucking fighting all about? Is it about revenge, right? Or is it about something else more nebulous, like heavy to find right now? Something more important than fighting. Something beyond all this.
But in the meantime, it looks like fighting is going to be on the menu. I like the bit when it all just like cuts across the rest of the world and the other characters, where we see Thorkell just lazily lying back in his cart. We see Leif Erikson
like waiting for the war to happen,
thinking that he spotted Thorfinn,
like an enslaved young blonde kid, and he's just like, "Is that Thorfinn?" I was like, "Oh fuck!" And you can see him freaking out. He's lost a lot of hair, I imagine, due to age and stress.
Yeah, it's hard to use elsewhere, man.
I think that was everything this episode.
Yeah, that's most everything. There's a lot of good, like, character interaction bits, but not a crazy amount happens, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's laying the car and rugging over the
stage. Exactly.
It's more like a transitionary thing, like the Rin whales are kind of on the move to where they need to get to. But even in the midst of these, like, strange allies of Ascalad, they're not safe even then. And other guys are in on the game as well.
It shows you how chaotic the world is at this stage as well,
yeah. I can see they know it's all going to come to this head, you know, with all these various parties now. I mean, they got Leif Erikson showing up. He's probably going to, like, you know, put a cat in one of the pigeons as well, trying to intervene and trying to extract Thorfinn out of this situation.
I liked the also like how the two Welsh guys are introduced, like standing as silhouettes within Roman ruins. It's like,
but also, that's pretty rad.
I think it's also ominous. Yeah, it's also noticeable from what we'll learn later on is that they refer to Ascalad as being a Dane as well.
Yeah, like they don't see him as one of them, but he sees himself as something halfway between. But he's an outsider everywhere, I guess.
Yeah. Then we've got next on the list is, oh blimey, we're already into Sunday. It is Rhea Solger, episode 28, a micro offense and defense. So this Nada guy who showed up, the guy who wanted to be the Red Ranger, but then left the village without ever becoming a Rhea Solger, he's a real piece of work, but not in a overtly unpleasant way. He just clearly wants to be the Red Ranger still, and he's like undermining Ko's confidence throughout the episode.
So is Ivan going like, you know, the Ranger who turns up, he's a bad guy, but eventually he'll turn face later on. He's just actively just being a dick.
No, that's the thing. He's not actively being a dick. Everything he's doing, you only know he's being a dick because you're the viewer. But it's not necessarily overtly. Okay. But you're also, as the viewer, you're going, is he Guy Solg as well? Is he somehow Guy Solg as well? Because he knows Bamba, and it's Guy Solg saying things that Bamba's master says, but is he actually Bamba's master, or does he say that because he knows Bamba's master at all? But at the same time, you know, well, his master was is Ko's master, the Red Master. Mm. So, yeah. What's going on there? Anyway, all we know for sure is that he's trying to undermine Ko's confidence, but because Ko is a hero, he is ultimately doomed to failure. They're out training together, and he's like saying, every time you're ready to attack, there's like a little shake. You're doing a little shake every time you attack. And that gets into his head, and then they run into Creon. And Creon fires a confetti gun at Asuna and Ko, and then runs away. And they're like, what the fuck was that about? Well, not in those terms, obviously. It's Sunday morning. But then when they get home, Asuna falls ill, and it turns out that inside that confetti cannon was a tiny Minosaur. Which is a Minosaur which was being created by a man who was whining to his wife. And his wife said, called him Baron Flea because he was short of height and was always demanding things. And so that insult personally hurt him. And so they were able to create a Minosaur from it. And then they've trapped him inside a warehouse, and they just, Creon and his like little foot soldiers are just dancing around this man, calling him Baron Flea over and over and over again to generate power for the Minosaur, because then it's going to grow inside Asuna and explode her. So they'll have to use the shrinking thing to shrink down and defeat it. So they go inside, but they're unable to, I can't remember exactly what it is. Basically, it boils down, they have to come back out again, and they've got to use, what's it called out of JoJo's Part 1? The Ripple. They got to use the Ripple to explode the monster inside of Asuna without exploding Asuna herself.
Ooh.
And basically Nada is training Ko to do this, because he's got to do it using the new big power armor upgrade he's got from the dad and son dinosaur. And he's trying to do it he's got a balloon in a net. And he's got to, in a glass case, I think he's got to like burst the balloon without smashing the case. I think that's what he's doing. But every time he does it, and he can't do it, and he can't do it. And he's like, I can't do it. Asuna, I can't do it. And then Asuna gets to do some more acting and has to act ill, but stand up to him and tell him, you're the knight of courage. You can do this, and turn her back to him and just go, thump me. And so that is enough to build his confidence back up after he's had it eroded all through the episode by Nada. And yes, he was able to knock the Minosaur right out of her. And then they combine the robots and blow it up. Now it's giant. I think that's pretty much it. Canelo gets involved in there somewhere. And then none of them are suspicious of Nada yet. It's only we, the viewers, get to see him going, I want to be the Red Ranger, or whatever it is. this might all be resolved next episode. We shall see. It's weird because I was expecting the show to like kick it up a notch halfway through, but I guess it sort of is, but in a tonally different way. The co's been, I think none of them have really had their confidence shaken that much, mainly Green and Black more than anybody else. Maybe Blue just because Tirameega doesn't like him, but that's just played for humor. But yeah, to have the guy who, as a viewer, you think is the leader, even if the character doesn't think of him as the leader himself, is having this guy come in and say, well, you're not good enough. But at the same time, you know the guy who's telling him isn't good enough is also not good enough himself. That's been firmly established through the plot. It's like, he's a guy who couldn't cut it as a knight and then ran away. But that's the other clue, is that when the Prime Minister met Guy Sorg, she told him that Guy Sorg was like her, and Nada's like her, in that they both ran away from the village without becoming Rhea Solgers. So that's the other clue that maybe he's Guy Sorg. But Guy Sorg's a suit of armour that you can't take off, so I don't know what's going on there. Just have to wait and see.
I'm sure they'll do a right way of it before the end of the season.
Yes, they've got... How many more episodes left? Probably about 20 episodes plus left. 20, 22, depending on how much they have to take off for rugby, I guess.
Sorry.
I'm not personally holding you responsible.
Well, as someone who enjoys rugby, I feel like, you know, my enjoyment of it is now going to detract from the
is that why
frequency
Fire Force
of Rio Soccer.
Because I read that Fire Force was taken off due to special programming, and I wasn't sure whether that special programming was rugby.
Well, as the month wears on, obviously there'll be less and less teams as they get knocked out. So once they get out of pool stages, there'll be just the quarters and the semis to go. I mean, this is going to be on until the end of October. So, you know, just hold tight for a little while. It'll be over soon.
Well, Shonen Ishiba, at least nothing's been like Shonen Ishiba. That was taken off of sports constantly, wasn't it?
Yeah, I must have really bad slot.
Golf.
Maybe I think golf. It was just short enough that you can take it out of the schedule if something is bound to overrun. Knowing this in the job that I do, you usually have like a short program scheduled after a thing, which can be dropped then in the event of something overrunning. So... that's probably what they're doing, that is getting rid of like the short thing or putting it on a break so that they have a little more leg room to let things go into extra time or for injury time, yada, yada, yada.
And then Star Twinkle Pretty Cure, episode 34. Hikaru is the student council president. The Twinkle election battle.
Did I miss a week? Because I think you're a little far ahead. That is next week, I think.
Oh, is it? That's my fault then. Sorry.
Feelings connect us, Elena and the Cactian. Now, I could be behind somehow. Well, I don't think I am.
Nah, if you got it off the fandom wikia, then they normally put a week's ahead episode in the list.
That might have been why I got it. My bad.
Yeah. In which a Cactian versus Earth, who is like a little alien. This is going to get a heads up that, just so you know, an inspector from the Galactic Alliance is going to be coming by to visit Earth just to see what it's all about. It's her a lot about because you girls and your exploits, so treat them nice when you get there, right? Okay, cool, sweet. Alien comes by, some kind of cactus person, as they were informed it would be. And it's like, oh, how are you going? Can't speak, though. It's just sort of like a long, gangly-limbed, like thorny kind of cacti, like spiked limbs with flowers in the end. It's wearing like a poncho and a sombrero because, hey, that's where cactuses come from, even anywhere in the universe. And try to communicate with it, but I can't really do it. But Elena just sees, this is obviously some kind of plant person. So I'll bring him down the river. But you want a bit of water, right? There you go. Actually, my man runs a flower shop and I help out there. So I know how plants work. I also know how to talk to people because I'm totally nice and sound and I want to get to know people. It's kind of cool. Made a mistake though of like, hey, how about you come to my flower shop? Which is kind of the same as taking like the if say it was like a space cow person, alien spectre, like bring into a, like a butcher shop to see what's going on. It's like, oh my god, what are you doing? And it seemed, the cat team seems pretty like put out by this. It's like, obviously Octavia upset them. Probably shouldn't have brought them to like this house of horrors where you have like plants and flowers just like cut up and arranged for people's entertainment and sold like a common commodity. What are we doing at all? But then informed by J.J. Abrams that, it wasn't that Cactus Guy, it was a different Cactus Guy. Our Cactus Guy is actually one, like, bunking off. He's, like, ditched his mission. He's on a holiday in Hawaii or somewhere. That's a different Cactus alien that you guys are talking about right there. It's like, oh, no. So they managed to kind of track it down and this it a giant monster, but able to get its feelings, get their feelings across, just, you know, not through words, but by actions and deeds, and, you know, trying to convey that, you know, well, what you feel, our planet trying to find more friends. And we're the friends, we can be those friends. Kyle, give us a chance and let us reach out to him. We can come to an understanding, and that's enough, and they'd be able to beat the monster. And, send them off on their merry way. I think, oh, you travel around the universe, I'm sure you meet, like, tons of friends. If not, you can always come back here. You got the five of us. maybe it also the mascot guys as well. Why not? And sends off the alien dude in their little spaceship, which I quite liked because it was sort of this weird, not like a kind of a candy striped rocket ship we've seen for most of the series. It's like this weird, like, organic alien pod that comes down and then opens out like a flower. Then there's this nice different flavor of science fiction design running through it instead. I like these Elena episodes because there is this little undercurrent there of, so she's half Japanese, half Mexican. And even though she fits in very well, she's one of the popular girls in school. Everyone loves her. She's a friend. She's nice to everybody. She's got great parents, great family. There's still like this sort of like thing about, feeling othered or like feeling like you're not, how it feels to be not quite from around you and how you have, ingratiate yourself into a different society that might see you as a little bit different, because no, she does have darker skin and she has blonde hair, and she speaks like and drops little Spanish loan words like into her common speech as well. You get this kind of sense that even, as much as she fits in Japanese society, and as much as you know, she's popular in school and getting on well, still there's like a little bit of like anxiety about your place and how other people will view you in the society and whether they fully accept you. This was another like one was in an earlier episode involving her brother who was kind of expressing those feelings, not in so many words, but the sentiment was there certainly. So again, trying to like convey these things in a palatable way to a younger audience, which I wholly appreciate. I think those kind of episodes, which is, we could kind of a frivolous Troy one, was kind of a nice little message, simplistic message, but a nice and important one nonetheless. And it kind of adds strongest when it's trying to nudge that kind of writing. Also, a bit of a paired up with a cool fight, that's also pretty good too. That's some nice cactus pin missiles coming out of us when the cactus guy turned into a giant monster. And also, their kind words causing the blossom at the end, and now they have like flowers all over the ground, so you can offer the flower back in return as a gesture of thanks. So it's quite lovely. It's lovely. So more like this, please. I kind of, this is when it's really in gear for me.
Then we've got Kamen Rider 01, Episode 5, His Passionate Path of Manga, in which the latest person to be supplied with a Huma Gear is a big-time famous manga artist who lives in a huge mansion filled with his own merchandise. The series appears to be about some sort of wolfman swordsman. And the president himself is going to deliver him his latest manga assistant Huma Gear, which is a very creepy opening scene of them showing up at his house with a giant cardboard box. And they open up the cardboard box and then a man gets out of it. I was like, oh yeah, of course, these are robots, so I guess you deliver them in cardboard boxes. It seems a bit dehumanizing, even though they're not humans, but they kind of are humans, as becomes more and more revealed.
You feel like it'd be cheaper to just go, hey, you're a sentient robot, right? And the robot's like, that's right, I'm programmed to be a sentient robot. It's like, here's bus fare, go to this guy's house.
Anyway, of course, like, Aruto...
maybe they enjoy it in there. They're like, yes. Bender in Futurama. He like wants like the sleep in the enclosed space.
Perfu Man Tsurugi is the name of the comic. Anyway, Aruto's a big fan of this comic. He watches the anime every Sunday. And so he hangs around and, yeah, he's kind of... He becomes raspberry disillusioned with his hero, this manga artist, because this guy doesn't draw as a comic anymore. He only uses his robot assistants, and then he works them to the point of collapse. He basically runs their batteries completely down. Because he's like, oh, they're just robots. They can work as much as I make them work. Which, then when a voice actress, Humagear, comes around later, that's contrasted with that voice actress, Humagear's, owner/manager. Who tells the artist to take care of her while she's there to do the voice acting. He's like, ah, well, no, she's a robot. I'll just make her do as much work as I want her to. Anyway, he's a disgraceful man, and Naruto's very disappointed in him that this guy's mistreating his robots, and he's also completely lost his passion for making comics, because apparently he doesn't even write the comics anymore. The editor supplies all the plots. So it's like, the question is, what is this guy actually doing beyond putting his name to it and harassing?
He's drawn Gogo's face, and that's about it.
That happened or happened recently enough, though. I think it was not Gogo 13, I think, but it was like a different one. I want to say if you're Takao Saito or Tetsuo Hara, I forget which, but it was something like long running comic that they're drawing for anyway. And they got like, you know, this, oh, you get like your storylines from the editorial or writing department. They'll send it down to you. It'll be some kind of, you know, really kind of formulaic thing. And so sending on the story down to him, and the Takao Saito / Tetsuo Hara, whatever it was, forgive my memory for not being able to remember which one it was, but, this says, lads, I drew this story like about 10, 15 years ago. Can't be sending it on to me again. Like, he had, like, this is almost like word for word, the exact same thing I drew all those years ago. In fact, it's been a fun memory to, at the power of recall for that. It was pretty good.
So then, the secretary, Izu, I think the secretary's name is, she gets curious about this passion that, the president keeps on talking about. And so she refers to her memory files and discovers that, oh, yes, the old president used to talk about passion as well. And that's, they were supplying, his idea was to supply these humor gears to people with passion. And so she withdraws all the humor gears from the manga artist. Basically shows up and says, you can't have any. And we've taken all the ones back. And meanwhile, the guy who's represented, the guy who wants to be the president, is like, what? You did what? And Aruto takes full permission, but they get attacked. Oh, yeah, they've been attacked earlier by one of the assistants who'd been turned into an evil robot by the laughing one of the terrorists. And, yeah, they have to fight it a second time. And then when they attack, Aruto notices that the manga artist goes to save his pen. He's like, you still have passion in you. We'll force the passion out of you by taking away all your crutches. But yeah, because the reason he explains is that he explains, yeah, you've got to like maintain your passion because the artificial intelligences can outdo us in productivity. So what you have to hang on to is your passion and your creativity. The thing AIs can't outdo us on. Meanwhile, there's also a subplot in that the cops have got a new shotgun and it's too powerful to shoot. That is resolved when the angry cop uses his Punching Kong power up, and then that's strong enough to shoot the shotgun. That's all they get to do this episode. Just advertise the new toy. Talking of new toys, Aruto gets a new power up, which is, I've done a very poor job explaining these power ups because they have really cool phrases. When they switch on, it is Flaming Tiger, Fire, the explosive power of 100 bombs. arms, basically. Whenever,
cool.
Whenever they put one of these on, use one of the progress keys, they get one of these catchphrases. So, 0-1s are, for Rising Hopper, the basic one, a jump to the sky turns to a rider kick. And then his biting shark is fangs that can chomp through concrete. And his flying falcon is spread your wings and prepare for a force. So Vulcan's got two so far. He's got shooting wolf, which is the elevation increases as the bullet is fired. And punching Kong,
all right,
which is enough power to annihilate a mountain.
Okay.
And finally, Valkyrie's only had the one power up so far, which is rushing cheetah. Try to outrun this demon to get left in the dust. But yeah, they all say the same thing. The demon notices the cops have got progress keys. The demon, the terrorist rather. Because he's trying to get hold of one of these because they use a different set of key. I can't remember what they're called. I know that one of the new riders who'll show up uses both the bad guy's keys and the good guy's keys to transform. So I assume he's the morally ambiguous rider. Anyway, all this fighting, once they defeat him, has reignited the passion for drawing the manga in the artist. And he's only going to use one assistant now, and the assistant even gets to wear a beret. Because it's also revealed earlier in the episode, is like one of the assistants is also suggesting ideas for the plot to the editor. So again, suggesting that, oh, hang on, these artificial intelligences can be creative to a degree. He's decided to put a Kamen Rider in the comic. And then Naruto is horrified to discover that it's Vulcan in the punching Kong armor is the one he's included. Because that was the cooler of the looking ones that showed up.
Oh, man. No one loves Getter 2. We all love Getter 1. I hate that. Getter 2 is so cool. It's got a drill hand.
And then it's revealed, apparently, that the giggling one of the terrorists is the son of the other one, even though they both look like teenagers.
So maybe
one built the other one.
Because
I don't think we've ever seen the giggling one without his hood up, so he may have like some of the humor gear, cyborg ears on. Anyway, it's great. This is a really good series. I really enjoy it. It's good Kamen Rider. And I expect it's going to escalate once the, whatever is it, Kamen Rider Thousa. Southa, whichever way they're going to pronounce it.
Southa.
Yeah. Shows up. He's the one who can apparently use the good guys and the bad guys' power-ups.
He puts his belt on the other way around, so you can't see what he's going to pull out.
Yeah, apparently he's from the other corporation, which has only just been mentioned in, like, screen visuals and, like, one line so far. But as I was watching this, I was like, okay, so they're worried about people not hiring their humor gears, and then I suddenly realize, oh, is there like a competitor somewhere in this world? Is there like, are they worried because people will go to another company to get these AIs from?
So in universe, is this new bad guy, because he can use the other guy's powers, is he like using knockoffs of their
I don't even know if he's a bad guy yet. That's the thing.
Interesting. Like, don't
buy the knockoff toys, kids. Get officially licensed merchandise.
It's Haber all over again.
It's the Kamen Rider 01 Souter Challenge. Can you take a rider kick from each one blindfolded and tell which one has kicked you in the chest? 9 out of 10 kids can't tell the difference.
Then we've got, this shouldn't take very long, One Piece 904, Luffy Rages, Rescue Otama from Danger. An episode in which Holder walks from his house to where Luffy is.
He's out from the roof, yeah.
As if like a few other things which happens, we get the little bit where, Akiku like tries to pretend to be the innocent girl again, and Zoro's not having any of it.
Yeah, I just seen you do like a super crazy backflip, yes, and chop off a dude's hair.
And because they've got minutes to kill, they show you that again.
Yeah.
Which actually helps driving that scene home better than it did in the comic. And yeah, otherwise there's a lot of loof. What does he keep on calling Hold'em?
Oh, like the guy is like stuttering as he's trying to say Hold'em. God, it's something like Bleak Baloo or something. It's just something that's very not his name.
Baldy Boo.
Baldy Boo.
Get out here, Baldy Boo. Baldy Boo.
I know you're there, Baldy Boo, you son of a bitch. Face me, Baldy Boo, you coward.
Fill your hand.
Yeah, which, I mean, like, I thought they were going to play into it. Hold'em's going to show up and, like, hey, I'm Hold'em, what the fuck? And it's like, yeah, bring me Baldy Boo. It's like, who the fuck is Baldy? I thought they were going to make a bit out of it, which might have been good, but I guess he's too angry to do a bit.
Don't think he's
They have to reveal that the girl is held in the lion's jaws, and the reaction is like, he's got a lion on his belly. Huh, that's weird. That's most of the episode. I did double check though that thing above the sumo wrestling thing is floating in midair, as far as I can tell. It's in the background of a few of the scenes in this.
Yeah. So yeah, basically Hold'em got squashed by Yokozuna. But Otama thought she could get away, but as she was running away, the arm of the lion on his belly grabbed her. And then Hold'em pulled himself out from under the sumo. And then, as I said, he spent the rest of the episode walking across town. While his men were getting murdered and punched, but mainly murdered, because there was two of the three people were slicing people apart with swords. One of them had a sword in his hand, but was just punching them in the face.
He does use the sword once to cut another sword.
Also, he keeps on throwing the sheath completely away every time he unsheathes the sword.
It's dramatic, looks cool.
Zoro's just like, no, don't, god damn it, because where are you going to put your sword after, you idiot?
Don't know. Covered.
And then he shows up and Luffy's like, hey, are you Baldy Boo? And he's got Otama in his mouth. Meanwhile, Law's like over on the rooftops going, is that Luffy? Yeah, that's Luffy. Because the other guys looking, Shaki and Penguin are looking out. Because Law's having to attend to Beppo after he drank the water when he was told not to drink the water.
At least that gives him an excuse to, like, what the fuck was Law doing all this time? It's like, his bear got sick.
Hawkins is also on the way, and Speed shows up, the other headliner.
There's a bit with Speed. She introduced her superpower of being able to see behind her own head. Which doesn't make sense because her ears do not have the placement on her head that a horse's, or ears, her eyes don't have the same placement as a horse's eyes. Which is really weird to me.
Well, I think that's part of the joke.
Also, same horses don't exist, Dwayne, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Why would you bring it to me like that? Come on.
Yeah, but I suppose it's kind of like at the fall was that horse girls anime from
Jesus.
A little while ago, which had accurate, like, you know, like long mobile phones so they could use them properly with their long ears.
Oh dear. I do like the weird horse jokes in this that they repeat. Yeah, she's all right, and more of her I think would be fun because she seems fun.
Yeah, I forgot how fun she was, and I think she may come across even more fun in the anime than she did in the comic because the voice acting's. Because she sounds like a
sailor. Gets to do the horse laugh. Yeah.
Yes. It's like the laugh, but also her normal voice is kind of like the sanest one of Kaido's men we've heard so far.
Yeah, she's got it all together, except any time she acts like a horse, which is a bunch of the time.
Yes, and she's always, as you say, she's always boasting about her 350-degree vision.
Oh dear.
Because people keep on telling her a thing, and then she goes, yes, I was aware of that due to my horse powers.
It's like, hey, Speed, you need to turn around and look at all the cool food that we got off these farmers. And she's like, I can see it from here, looking the wrong direction, because I'm a horse, you see.
I guess now we know from reading the comic the success rate of Smile. I guess you would boast if Smile had actually worked
if
properly.
If your shit actually fucking works.
If it worked, yeah.
Check it out. I got these horse legs. I can see like a horse. I smile like a horse. I got it all, baby.
Yes, she doesn't have a lion who punches itself in the balls.
I feel like Holden was just a big guy, and he got lucky that his power is like, I guess it's handy that he has a second set of arms and a head, but the other set of arms and head he has no control over.
Lion's,
but he's just big,
scary.
So he's good. Yeah.
A
lion is pretty scary, yeah.
When we see what it can do to you, then yeah, that's probably getting off.
We've seen what it could do to his own balls, so yeah.
Yeah, the first half wasn't looking great, but once they get to the Holden bit, the speed bit, the rest of the episode is pretty great. There's like one great bit where the lion on his chest is like, has got one arm out on Holden's hip, as if he was looking sassy. What was going on?
It's weird with how much like they're given to. I keep forgetting the fucking lion's name.
Yeah,
because I know it's great that it has a name. Even they're given so much material to the lion. Like obviously Holden smacking into the sumo wrestler's face and the belly hitting the lion, that kind of stuff. They're giving it a lot of material to work with, and it's good. It works.
Well, it's probably a lot more like, so Holden is a guy who's like, it's a guy who has like a lion growing out of his tummy. But then the lion then is probably thinking, I'm a lion with a man growing out of my back. So who's in control here?
Kamajiro is the lion's.
Kamajiro, okay. dear.
It's so weird. God, he's got a lot to answer for, hasn't he, Caesar?
Like this is if you wanted to do a step worse than your what's your man who had the island full of animal people? God damn it!
Oh, I mean, such like
Dr. Moreau.
If you want to do a step, I was thinking Dr. Moreau.
I thought
you meant
the guy trapped in the treasure chest. in one place.
No, that's a good point. Goemon or something, I think that is. But how the hell do I remember his name? What the hell? If you want to do a step worse than Dr. Moreau, then I think this weird, like, partial thing, or sometimes you get a rabbit's ears, I don't know, man, whatever.
If I had known that the fruit I was genetically engineering to imitate the powers of the most mystical fruit would create a race of alternately hideous beastmen / cackling maniacs, I would have become a watchmaker. Yeah. A bit wordy for a quote, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm really guessing we're probably going to learn other terrible things about Caesar Clown once we ever get to Vegapunk or Sanji's dad's flashback.
Mm.
Cause they're all entangled, aren't they, together? Cause they all used to work together.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah. Like we've talked about this far more than actually happened in the episode.
Oh, yeah.
On to Gegege no Kitaro, episode 75, Kyobe no Kitsune.
Mystery solved. It was the Kyobe no Kitsune after all.
It was.
They weren't pulling the double blinds on us or anything. It's like, nope. That's how it is.
One of its tails, anyway.
Yeah.
Just a setup for a spin-off series we'll never see.
Oh man, I was thinking that at the end as well. It's like, we're going to go on and have more adventures. And I was like, yeah, sure you are, but okay.
Well, to be fair, this does have last episode does have two characters show up from previous adventures. So.
Yep. Yeah. They're bringing back.
That's true.
So yeah, basically Ray's body starts betraying him because he's ignored the teachings of his master, and he's absorbed too many spirits.
And also, like, if you try and beat up, let's say, I don't know, a friend of the four other ghosts you absorb, they could probably like hold you down while he beats the shit out of you. So that's a problem.
This definitely must have been an hour long episode originally, because there's no cliffhanger from last week. Really, it just, the scene ends. And it moves on from where it was last week. I'm trying to remember what order everything happened in. There's the fight. There's the bit where Neko, Masume, and Mana go to hell. But in order to get, they can't use the normal methods. So they go and contact the witches via the mirror yokai who scares the hell out of the witches because they've got a really big mirror.
Well, it's not so much scares as opposed to she pulls a gun on the mirror, which is an interesting fucking response.
So when
you're
bad luck for
for you, old man.
hell exists everywhere. You know, in other countries, you're just going that way, which in I guess wherever Agatha and Adele are is like a kind of like Van Gogh starry sky at night sort of landscape. It's kind of cool, actually.
Mm. But yeah, we can use the witches to get into hell, and that's a reasonably good plan. They just they set up like a not a summoning circle, like a teleportation circle. It's like, yeah, this thing is right to the heart of hell. Whoop! So here we are in hell, and they kind of get the information out of a Medzuki, I think.
Yeah, it's the one of the guardians who's not being hypnotized by
and he got beat up for his trouble. Movies. Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tamamo no Mae. That's a proper term. Yes. Multiple names.
Yeah, because the problem is she's draining power now directly from the crucible of hell.
Which means she's like regenerating instantly and stuff.
Yes, when Kitarei pursues her after getting the spirits back from Rei. Also gives him Niue as well, I guess, to hand back.
Really, yeah. That's part of the deal. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of like, this wasn't mine in the first place.
I'm also, keeping I'm keeping the big giant pony arms, though.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
And then they also go and find, what was his name from the third one of the,
Ibukimaru.
That's
the
him.
Hido.
To get his help as well, because they know that he wasn't all bad. In fact, he was conflicted, much like Kitaro and Rei, of not knowing how the human world and how the yokai world can live together. Which I thought that was the crowning achievement of this episode, is it tied all that nicely together as a theme. And so kind of like Kitaro's like more emboldened to find a way in which for the two worlds to live together. Rei by the end is like realizing that he doesn't have to destroy all yokai in order to keep the peace.
Yep. And then Mana is also the linchpin in like getting the power of seal and restoring order back to hell as well.
Yeah. And also Nezumi Otoko is like, I'm not going through another fucking war.
Fuck the government.
Yeah, that was like that was kind of fucked up. It's like, oh yeah, I guess he's seen some fucking shit. And also when he just shows up like a fucking maniac to the Prime Minister of Japan. Okay. He shows up to her not office, but he shows up to government headquarters, like, dressed like a fucking lunatic, and he's like, I got dirt on all you motherfuckers, don't try anything.
Nobody move, or I'll
rip tweet, wicked I'll fart fucking tweet, I'll do it. Them out. dear. Yeah. That was pretty great. It's like, you know, they're like, should we do a war? And he's like, don't fucking move. Don't you fucking dare. Kitaro will fix it. I don't know how. I haven't been involved in this thing so far, but I'm not going through another...
I might be a low-life, dirty, rat man scumbag, but I never declared war on nobody, like you creeps. No way, man. No way.
Yeah, good heel turn. Also, he farts his way to victory as well. I forgot to mention that. Of course he does.
The way the Prime Minister's betrayed always reminds me a little bit of how they did the Penelope Wilson Prime Minister during the Russell T. Davis Doctor Who a bit, but of somebody who starts out being like an ally and then as the series goes along gradually becomes more and more corrupt.
Well, it's
more like
politics,
incompetent.
Yes. Incompetent and corrupt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Kitaro is battling in hell, but then hang on, she's lost her power because the witches have sealed up the crucible. Well, Nekomasume beats up all the guardians.
So her plan is like, okay, cut off the power source. That's a bit of a problem. I'll just absorb all my tails back and we'll be fucking golden because I still got enough battery to work on this.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ray's back and he's now merged with, Sword Boy.
To an even sexier Rei. My God.
There's a devilish, roguish air about him.
Yes, he's got the longer hair, the single horn thing, the your man's cool sword, that kind of jazz. Yeah.
And then victory music plays, and you know, I always like when a show's got a battle victory music, because he's like, here we go, lads. Here we go. Victory is on our side. Yeah, we, Kitaro's like flanked by the, ghosts of his friends who are already ghosts. And they just fire themselves right through her.
Your kid Goku special. Yeah. Just launch yourself head first, shoot by straight to the chest of your opponent.
Well, when he flies off the inside. When he flies off initially, like using the cloth thing, I was thinking that's very Dragon Ball as well.
Yeah. And then generic 80s dictator thinks, what was I thinking? Go to war with Japan?
That's crazy. I'm just the random dictator of a non-specific country. What business do I have in a war?
Also, Enma Dio's body was apparently in the middle of... Had she just eaten him?
I guess it ate him.
Yeah.
I guess you can't destroy him, so she just, like, ate him. And I think the only comment is, like, Daddy Eyeball going, like, oh, he's a tough old bird or something like that. Like, all right, I guess that's how you're going to explain how the Lord of Hell didn't get his ass completely handed to him. It was like, oh, he was just inside the fox. That's fine.
And then Kira gets a slap for not telling Nekomasume that he'd done a deal with the devil to get her back. And basically shouldering all responsibilities himself.
Not letting her help him out, just helping her out, yeah.
Well, I suppose
it's a selfless selfishness, basically.
Yeah, but he couldn't have defeated the Kyuubi no Kitsune without everybody's help, whether they were in spirit form or otherwise.
Yes, because that's a bit earlier in the episode, because Nekomasume was about to do the same to Mana as Kitaro had done to her.
Mm.
And then she stops herself and, yeah, lets Mana assist.
Yeah, that would be a dick move now that I think about it. You're right.
You have, like, spiritualistic powers passed down from you to a lineage of generations. Why would I not use these when it could be, like, the exact thing we need to solve this situation? Also, you know, literal witches, you know, magic. Let's just get them in on this as well. Let's, like, throw all our allies at this.
Yeah.
Why would we
to help you and not to take it all on your own, that kind of thing.
Which is again, like, you know, it's the women who have come up with that idea. And Kira was, no, I'm as sure as Buddin alone.
See, that was the thing with your man fusing with the other, it's fucking Dragon Ball. The man fusing with the other yokai general, cause it's kind of like, he's like half the guy and half himself rather than it's just like, I just have, the Nue's head as an arm or something like that, where he was just taking on the form. It's now like a more like a fusion thing, working together rather than taking it all on yourself.
He stands beside you.
that's the kind of theme of it. And I did like the way all Kitaro's friends are just around. Is like, well, I'm glad your man brought us all back to life. That was nice of him. It was kind of like there's no like, oh, you need to do another deal to bring all your friends back. It's like, no. I was like, well, you didn't save me in hell. Okay, you're all back.
You apart from the inside of a demon fox. Come on, you can throw one of my mates for the power of the bargain, right?
Okay. Yeah, he's now no longer looking like a Bleach character. He looks like a Shaman King character instead.
Much more fitting and adequate.
At least one of the cool ones, not Lysurk.
I'm letting that go, huh?
Never. You ruined that show.
Peter Tombstone, still hate Lyser.
Yes.
For all eternity.
And to like reflect the friendship thing as we see all the gang together, eyeballing, Mana, paying her respects at the graves of Ray's village. Apparently they'd all crammed into a really tiny car.
It looked like fucking Lupin's car. That was weird.
Yeah. Off in the sunset, ready for another caper.
Mm.
I guess it must be Nozomi Otoko's car. Because none of the others would own a car.
I'd say Sandwich probably has a car.
We know how much money she'd got. She'd have a much nicer car.
But she's very small. She won't buy a car that's more than she needs.
That's true, yes.
Mm, yeah.
It's like, you know, I use a car, wouldn't mind, just whizzing down to the beach, you know, up the odd Sunday, just reading a book. But, you know, I'm a fucking, like, sand ghost lady. I can't fund, like, where are we going to park that thing? You know, I'm going to money up, we're going to park that thing. Like, I mean, you can't park it in the forest, in the Giga forest. There's no fucking roads in the place. Impractical.
And then next week, the start of the final season.
Akio Otsuka strikes again.
Yes. Yeah. 1 week, you'll be on every single thing we watch, I'm sure. Nurarion's ambition. Yeah, he'll be showing up. He'll definitely showing up in One Piece the week of whenever the act one of Wano ends, because he's in the interstitial bit in the comic. What's it called? I can't remember what his pirate island's called. Anyway, we'll
don't Full know. Of Lead.
Yeah. Full of Lead, yeah, that's it.
Mm.
Nurarion's ambition. I'm now gonna get it off my shelf and read the first story again.
What'll happen too if he winds up? Yeah, he'll be in Africa Saturday, man. He'd be going to be on like on every screen. It's like he's like this rolling combo of Akio Otsuka just being himself in various cartoons.
Yeah, I have signed up for the 14-day trial rather on Funimation, so I can at least watch the first episodes of every new thing. So
okay.
I will get to see. African Salaryman.
Yeah, get the After School Dice Club, which I know you're looking forward to one up there as well, isn't it?
That is up as we're recording, I do believe. So I should take a look at that. I've already looked at the wrestling one.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll just save my thoughts for next week.
Okay.
Ooh. Or for Twitter. if you want to hear my thoughts before that. Okay, I think that is it. Oh no, we've got one more thing. Niall watched another thing he'd been keeping in secret from us.
Oh, yeah. I can fill it in, but I kind of finished up over the weekend. I was looking at Old Maidens in your seventh season. Because again, it's the Mario Kata written story for a manga adapted into anime series that aired this season. It is a story about a literature club in high school, and for five girls, and they read just like in their own minds, just very highfalutin, very classical, very nice kind of intellectual and sophisticated kind of literature. But they're really reading it all the kind of the saucy romantic kind of scenes. It's like, ooh, yes, like how romance and sexuality must be conveyed in such eloquent words, but. To come to kind of thinking, well, we know all about stuff. I've loved reading it in books and, but how about actually experiencing it again? Guys, any thoughts? It's like, I don't know. Haven't really thought about that way for a while. And then one of them there, Nina, who is kind of the cool girl in the group. She's kind of the one who stands out. They're both kind of, rest of them are kind of, you know, wouldn't say nerdy, but it wouldn't be like, you know, the class president or whatever like that. But then there's Nina, who was, you know, she comes to an acting school, and she's like so elegant and beautiful, and she's joining our club. Why is that? She says full out, yeah, I'm gonna have sex one day. Let's go out and do it before I die. Just wanna like see what, find out what's all about, and I'll do that by any means possible. And it kind of sets them all in the course of kind of having to kind of directly confront any kind of their lingering feelings or anxieties or complexes about sex and sexuality, because they're at that age of like 16 or 17 in high school, and it's like, you know, suddenly, oh, dumb boys start looking a lot more handsome before, and you know, I don't know how I feel about it. So you all kind of wind up in encountering it, or more kind of a head-on collision in their own different ways. You got one who's like, she's been all up in best mates with the boy next door, but now obviously he's grown up to be a bit of a hottie, and she kind of feels kind of awkward about it now, and she doesn't know how to approach it. She thinks she does like him, but she doesn't know how to go about it. Nina, as mentioned, she's kind of a cool girl. She came from an acting school, but she had a weird relationship with the rector of the stage school, whatever it was, who is just flat out a paedophile. She's kind of just relates her story to he's gonna be the boy next door later on when they have the whole thing going on, and she just relates the whole story in dramatic fashion, and she says, he's a flat out dude, your director was a fucking paedophile. It's obviously obvious to me, it's just you telling me that. So I kind of like how directed it is in that sense as well. One of them is a secret, like, published author who's, like, written a lot of kind of racy, like, kind of trashy novels, but now the editors on her back saying, you gotta, like, more kind of realistically, more kind of, like, down to earth, so people can relate to it, but obviously she's never had sex in her life. She doesn't know how to fucking do that. She's kind of gets into this like clandestine thing with the teacher, who's also like the faculty member, who's like the supervisor of their after school club. And that spirals off as disastrously as you'd expect. Then you got one of your girls who is, doesn't really kind of pan out until the end of the series, but she's gay, but doesn't know it yet. And so you just kind of spend most of the series kind of shouting at her, "You're gay, you just don't know it yet, you're gay, you don't know it," but she kind of eventually figures it out. And then, like, I guess the president of the club then is, Poppy the more, have more kind of highest, more kind of snobby opinions about, "Oh no, I'm like, no, what I read, you know, is high class literature. I never, I debase myself by getting into a physical relationship with anybody at that end, you know, and soiling my carefully held principles." But then winds up in a kind of a standard shoujo romance comic plot, and she loves it, which she inspired herself. It's like, but still acts like all, she's a kind of aloof and above it all. And so just like these idiots trying to figure out, basically, how do sex work, and how do I do it with people, as you often want to do when you're a teenager at that age. But what I less like is how direct and sort of blunt it is about that whole thing. And it's a realistic depiction of, like, this awkward stage in your life. It keeps it, like, fairly real and realistic, but it plays up enough elements with, for comedy or drama and other scenes to kind of keep you engaged all the way through. I'd say I'll put it in this way. For example, you know, watching, like, you know, the saucy high school comedy, you got, like, you know, maybe, like, one dude and a bunch of girls, and they're all, like, you know, fawning over him or falling over him, or alternately. Mm. And they have the whole thing where, like, the female character will walk in, without even knocking into a room unannounced, and then the fella starts having a private moment, and he's like, "No, maybe getting dressed," and she would go, "Back here," and throw him out a window. It's like, "But you came in there. Why is this my fault?" Have this scene, I think it's in episode one even, or Kazusa, she's like going to see like the boy next door, because, you know, they just bring him, her mom makes like extra dinner, brings it over to him, and to go, "Oh, I'll bring it over to you, Izumi, my old childhood friend, you know, and he probably wants him to meet after a hard day of after school club, so I'll go and see how he is." Can't find him in the house, goes upstairs, probably in his room, just kind of walks into the room, he's having a wank, and she just backs away, saying, "Okay, awkward, I've just seen that. I'll see you at school. Which is a realistic reaction to that kind of thing. You don't just like unload on somebody when you just walk in like that unannounced. It's like, yeah, this is like how it actually go down. It'd be super awkward, and it's going to continue with that for most of the series. I won't let on too much about how it transpires, but the core message is, and this kind of thing you wish you wanted to hear when you're at that age, is that, okay, you're looking at the opposite sex, they seem like so very mysterious, and they got it all figured out, and they know like a lot more than you what's going on about that whole thing you're interested in, and you want to talk about it with people, you just don't, can't find the words, you don't know how. Secret is, nobody knows anything about this. Everybody is equally as stupid and awkward and shy about this as everybody else. It's just a convey it or act about it in different ways. Mm. So don't feel bad about it. It's just a thing, it will take time to learn for you to approach and do it in your own way at your own pace. Don't like feel compelled to rush in because society, your school, peer pressure tells you to do that.
No, you missed the best bit about that wanking scene, is that when she then runs out and runs home, is that every single thing she reminds her of sex on the way out.
It's been so long ago, I forgot about that.
I thought it was just like cringe humor, but it's like really leading into her awkwardness after seeing it then.
I forgot about that. It's so long ago.
Just every single visual metaphor for sex you could possibly imagine that she runs across on the way out.
She's rolling down like the streets and there's neon lit signs singing like fun Big John's foot long hot dogs and also it ends with, you know, it ends with a nice scene with two of the characters, and there's like trying a train, and then the train goes into a tunnel, and there's a little smirk as it goes in. It's like They know what they're doing.
Yeah, I already saw the first episode. Yeah, I think I still prefer Galco Chan, but I suspect this is more reasonable than, because Galco Chan is like a weird thing where it has a male gaze and yet it's probably less sex obsessed than this show. Because there's only one character who's sex obsessed, and then she's only sex obsessed because she knows it embarrasses the other characters to bring it up. But yeah, they're both good, but I just did not have time to watch all of this.
Yeah, I would say give it a go if you've got a high-up account and want something to do with it. Most, a lot of other good things on there, but this is a pretty good example of a recent show that I would flip back and I'm going to have some, think about it a little bit more. Oh, I forgot, also by Masahiro Ando, who was a director I quite enjoy. Like his stuff, Serious Jaeger, that was middling, but I think he was being maybe restrained a little bit by various things in that. But there's a good hand in drama as well, and this is a good example of that too. And of course, Mario Okada, you can have, you can be a kind of a divisive writer. Now your stuff will either be not for you or, you're going to be all into it.
Yeah, I was going to say, normally it's not for me. The one thing I like is apparently the thing she didn't come up with the plot for, so.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, got a twang.
But maybe she's kind of like evolving a bit more as a writer and then just like, this is something that's had, as far as I can tell, fairly widespread appeal. It isn't going to talk about a hell of a lot, but anybody who's
come across it. On High Dive. Yeah. No one's coming
across. There's that, but anything I've heard about it is usually in the positive, and they appreciate the sentiment it's trying to convey, both in the comic and in the television series. So yeah, give it a go. I'll be considering this for my choice in a forthcoming panel at a forthcoming convention.
Okie dokie. Well, I also watched a thing. I also watched Sturgill Simpson Presents Sound and Fury on Netflix.
Yeah.
But I might talk about that on an entirely separate podcast.
Maybe.
It's pretty good. It's, will I say, it's like, I don't know if it'll just be Kamikaze Video that Pop Team Epic has a continuing influence upon, but that's what it reminded me of, even though it's nothing like Pop Team Epic. But just like the anthology feel of it and the fact that Kamikaze do, let's do the maths. I have the notes here. Already starting writing notes for an unplanned podcast. 1, 2, 3, 4 of the 10 segments are, Kamikaze. And they're the overall in charge is, Junpei, Mizusaki of, Batman Ninja fame. He was not expecting something, that reminds me of, Into the Aftermath, the live action Angel's Egg adaptation / hack job. and nor for that part to be from, Michael Arias. But there you go. Also, very good album.
It should at least sound good.
It does at least sound good. Yeah. I'm new to Sturgill Simpson, so the only other thing I've heard from him is his song on The Dead Don't Die.
Yes, yeah.
So I understand, though, that this is a significant departure in his sound, which has not been found entirely satisfactory to the people who want him to just constantly make country music. Because this has a disco song on it, so.
Oh.
Amongst many other themes. But, it's only 40 minutes, and probably 5 minutes of that is a decent amount of credits. So it doesn't take you very long to watch the entire thing. And or listen to the entire thing. And it's one of these things where you're like, thank goodness Netflix have got far too much money they don't have to spend. Because they don't have the money to spend, but they keep on spending it. So.
When it comes to birthdays, like women, you guys...
Well, you run that whole operation at a loss, you know. Just keep on rolling it over.
And someone accident, and the listener would have heard a tiny bit of Netflix because I accidentally clicked on Netflix there, and of course it played a fucking trailer. For, of course, a comedy show. Not a comedy show, a stand-up comedy thing.
I just have the tab is muted if I'm watching this on the browser. It's like, because like, don't bother when I get scrolling to find like fun spew some shite of it. Like, oh, isn't there like Netflix fucking original series called, what is it called? Bank robbery or something other. Crime heist. It was some like really stupid name that's quite what I was all about.
I'd watch Crime Heist. I don't know.
I was going to say, I'm surprised they haven't shown me that because that seems exactly my sort of thing.
I don't know. Just the name was just so kind of dumb. It's just like, you know, like fun crime caper. Money steal.
Money steal, do bad.
Big Bang Theory. What is that? Right. Okay, that's your lot. Anything coming up on Secret of Sailor Madness?
I don't know.
Excellent. I also don't know what's coming up on Dynamite the Brain. It may be Dwayne. I do believe it probably is Dwayne because no one else has volunteered on the anime that didn't make us.
That's what I get for volunteering.
I mean, part of the problem was, is I asked for volunteers and then people leapt in with a conversation about Amicon. There you go. Anyway, Amicon next year, I'll be there, probably running stuff, because I'm there.
I'll be there too. They asked me to come.
Exactly. Well, I was going to say, they sort of asked me to come, but yes, they did. I said effectively they did, but I don't know how much of that is for public hearing, so I shall leave it there. We'll be back here next week with far too much Let's Go. Goodbye.
Oh, God. Bye.
See you then.